Left off last week, we were discussing the Gemaras about the Ten Lost Tribes. So last week we spoke about the background and the history of the Ten Lost Tribes and who they were and how they got lost, basically. And then we discussed the earlier sources that we have regarding the Ten Lost Tribes. There was one Gemara that I did not have time to get to, which is a very puzzling Gemara and possibly a very relevant Gemara. Possibly for understanding the status of the Ten Lost Tribes today. I know that the title this year was Lembas and Peshtun, so I think we'll do that next week. So let's keep the title this year for next week. This week is still a bit more of an introduction. First the Gemara, and then I'd like to talk about how do we establish or trust somebody regarding their claim to being Jews. Meaning, how do we know anybody's Jewish nowadays? And do you believe and do we trust people when they claim that they are Jewish?
Why do they need conversion?
Right. And do they need conversion? Right. They would only need conversions if we don't trust them. Like, if we trust them, we don't need conversion. So, the Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara says that, in the name of Rav Asi, that Obey Kochavim Shekidesh Vizman Hazeh Choshim LeKidushim, that if you have a non-Jew who's Mekadesh, a woman nowadays, he gets married to a Jewish woman nowadays, we have to be concerned that that is a good Kiddushin. Which means we have to be concerned that that is a real Kiddushin, and therefore he would have to give her a get. That this non-Jewish man would have to give the Jewish girl a get. Now, generally, the rule is that if a non-Jew marries a Jew, there's no Kiddushin. Halachically, ein kiddushin tovshin. There's no real halachic kiddushin of marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew. So the question is, what does the Gemara mean? The Gemara says that if a non-Jew marries a Jewish girl, we have to be concerned that maybe there's a real kiddushin, and therefore, if they get divorced, they have to have a guest. Why? So the Gemara says, shema me'aseres hashvatim hu, because maybe this non-Jewish man comes from the Ten Lost Tribes. Right, the 10 tribes. That's the Gemara statement. So there are a lot of problems with this statement, right? First of all, what's the first obvious problem with this statement or question on this statement?
Isn't it my
right? Why should we be concerned, right? The percentage of the 10 tribes in the rest of the non-Jewish world is very small, right? So why would we be concerned that this non-Jew is from the 10 lost tribes? Right, there's a random non-Jew in the middle of wherever, and we have to be concerned that maybe he has Jewish blood in him, that we have to be concerned that maybe he's really halachically a Jew, and therefore we have to be concerned that maybe there's a real Kiddushin here. So the Gemara asks that question. That's right. The first question the Gemara asks is, V'ha'ak kol deparish meruba parish. We have a general rule that is, that whenever we have a group, and one object or one person comes out of that group, then we assume that it came from whatever the majority of the group is, right? For example, if you have 10 pieces of meat in front of you, right? Some are kosher, some are non-kosher, and let's say 6 of the 10 are kosher, 4 of the 10 are non-kosher. If I take one piece of meat, I can assume that called the parish meruba parish, anything, the piece that I pulled out, I can assume is part of the majority, and therefore it's probably a kosher piece, and I can eat this piece of meat. As long as it's part of the majority, I can assume that it's a kosher piece of meat and I could eat it. So the Gemara says, call the parish meruba parish. If you're walking on the streets of New York and you ask any random non-Jewish person, you know, about their lineage, the chances are they're not going to be from the 10 lost tribes. Right? If you take one non-Jew and that person marries a Jewish girl, chances are he's not from the 10 lost tribes. So what do you mean that we have to be concerned that maybe there's a kiddushin? So the Gemara says, b'duchda d'kvi. The Gemara answer is no. It's talking about a case, an area, that we know for a fact that there are members of the Ten Lost Tribes living in this area. Right? That we have another principle called kavua, that anything that is kavua, which means that we know it's here, we know that it's present, then it's kamechta al mechta dami. Then it's as if it's half and half. For example, if you have a group of people and you know that there are Jews and non-Jews in there, and somebody throws the rock and kills a person, so we treat it, since it's kavua, meaning if everybody was standing still and everything is still, we assume that it creates basically a 50-50 percentage, and therefore everything is half. So even if really there are 9 to 1, 9 non-Jews to 1 Jew, nevertheless, if everybody is in place, then it creates a situation of kol kavua kemechta amechta dami, and therefore we have to assume 50-50. So if this is a town that we know that the Aseret HaShvatim live, that the 10 lost tribes live, the Gemara then goes on to say, like areas called Chalach, Chabor, and Nahar Gozan, which is the Gemara that I was looking for last week, when I told you that it lists a few of the places, and some of these places are places in Afghanistan, Pakistan, that border there, that do have these names or names similar to it. A Nahar, I think it's called Gazit over there, and here it's called Gozan, and there is a place called Chalach, there is a place called Chabor. But in those places where we know that the Aseret HaShvatim went, because after the Pasuk in Malachim says that Sancheriv took them and exiled them to Chalach and Chabor and Nahar Gozen, so if in one of those places we assume that if any non-Jew is Mekadesh, a Jewish girl, then we have to be concerned with the Kiddushin. Because it's basically 50-50. Even though, yes, it's more likely that this person is not from the 10 tribes, because it's simply in the numbers. Nevertheless, we treat it as Kol Kavua Kamechta Amechta Dami, we treat it like it's 50-50. Now, the Gemara then goes on. So the Gemara then says, so that's Rav Asi's statement, right? Rav Asi's statement is that a non-Jewish man marries a Jewish woman, that we are concerned that this non-Jew is a member of the 10 tribes, and therefore he requires a get. Now, what's the concern? So Rashi explains that the concern is that maybe he comes from a father, his great-great-grandfather was from the 10 tribes, and his great-great-grandmother was a non-Jew, one of the locals, and therefore he is a mamzer. Right? He is a Jewish mamzer. Right? And therefore, a Jewish mamzer is not allowed to marry a Jewish girl. So there, and that's why we have to be choshesh that maybe there's a real kiddushin here, and he would require a get. So what's the problem with that? Right? We don't assume this way. Right? What do we generally assume? If a non-Jewish man has a child with a Jewish woman, what's the status of the child? A non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman is Jewish. What about vice versa, which we're talking about here? A Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, what's the status of the child? Non-Jewish. So we assume that that child is non-Jewish. This opinion of Rav Asi assumes that it creates a child who's a mamzer, right? A Jewish man with a non-Jewish woman makes a mamzer, which means that it's an illegitimate Jewish child, but it's a Jewish child. And therefore that illegitimate Jewish child, if you try to convert that illegitimate Jewish child, what happens to the child? Can he go through a conversion process?
It's already Jewish.
Right. So can he convert?
No.
Right? A mamzer, once he's a mamzer, always a mamzer. There's nothing to do about it. It's not the child's fault. It's an unfortunate circumstance, which is the result of irresponsible actions by the parents. But it makes a mamzer, and once the person is a mamzer, there's nothing to do about it. That person is a mamzer. He's an illegitimate child. If a Jewish man has a child with a non-Jewish woman, we assume that the child is not Jewish. Now what that means is, if the child were to go through a conversion, is a full-fledged Jew. And then that full-fledged Jew can marry a Jewish girl. And then if that full-fledged Jew who went through a conversion married a Jewish girl, and they have a child, that child is like any other Jewish child. The problem is, this Rav Asi assumes that when you have a Jewish male who marries a non-Jewish woman or has a child with a non-Jewish woman, it doesn't create a non-Jewish child, but it creates a mamzer. Okay, so that's the first assumption that needs to be understood to understand this Gemara. It won't matter in the end, you know, we'll see. What's interesting about this Gemara is the conclusion of the Gemara, I think, is very interesting. Not the first step, which is interesting, but that's not why I'm bringing it up. This is what Rav Asi holds, right. So then the Gemara then goes on to say that Shmuel responds to Rav Asi's statement that if a non-Jewish man marries a Jewish woman, we have to be concerned that really this non-Jewish man is a Jewish mamzer, and therefore she would require a get. Right? That's what Rav Asi says. Shmuel says, there are two answers of Shmuel. two versions of what Shmuel's response was, both of them explaining that that's not true. Right? That your concern, Rav Asi, is wrong. So his two responses are as follows. The first one is easy. The first one is what our response would be. That's simply not the halacha. That the halacha is that he says, Amar lei, bincha haba min ha-Yisrael is karoi bincha, your child, meaning your child, your grandchild who comes from a Yisraelis, is called your child, meaning is considered still a Jew because his mother was Jewish. Ve'ein bincha haba min ha-Obed is kochavim karoi bincha, ela bina. But your child, meaning your grandchild that comes from a non-Jewish woman, if it's right, then is not considered your child, but rather hers. Right? So meaning, it goes after the mother. Whether the child is a Jew or not a Jew, goes after the mother. So if you tell me that we have to be concerned that this non-Jew is a Jewish mamzer, so what Rav Shmuel's answer is, that's simply not the case. Because if his father was a Jew, and his mother was a non-Jew, he's not a Jew. And if his father was a non-Jew and his mother was a Jew, then he would be a Jew. But that doesn't seem to be the concern. The concern only seems to be that maybe his father was a Jew and his mother was a non-Jew. And his father was one of the Ten Lost Tribes, and they intermarried with the local community that they joined, and therefore their children will be mamzers, says Rav Asi. Answer Shmuel, that's not the case. The child of a member of the Ten Lost Tribes and a local non-Jewish woman will be a non-Jew, not a Jewish mamzer. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about the women, right? Meaning, you're right, we got rid of that concern, that this man who marries a Jewish girl nowadays, we don't have to be concerned that he's from the Ten Tribes, that he's a Jewish mamzer, because if his mother was not Jewish, then he's not Jewish, and he just has to have he has to convert. But if he doesn't convert and he's non-Jewish and he marries a Jewish woman, it's not a marriage. It's not considered a kiddushin. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second. What about all of the women? Right? What about all of the women from the Ten Lost Tribes? Maybe this non-Jew who marries a Jew nowadays, maybe his great-grandmother was a female from the Ten Lost Tribes. And maybe, therefore, he's really Jewish. And therefore, when a non-Jew nowadays marries a Jewish girl, maybe we do have to be concerned that really they're married, because maybe he thinks he's not Jewish, but really he is Jewish, because his great-grandmother was from the Ten Lost Tribes.
What's the concern? Still only the concern. It's still not a mamzer.
No, but he's Jewish.
Okay.
And therefore, if they get divorced,
that means
they need a get.
Okay. That means his mother and his grandmother.
Correct.
Yes,
correct.
Like, you know, it's like how many scaling up?
True, it's true. It's a small percentage. But if we're concerned because it's an area that we know that the Ten Lost Tribes settled in, then we have to be concerned. In which case, you'd require a get if they get divorced. So the Gemara says a very fascinating answer. The Gemara says that the Gemara says that the women in that generation, itztaruye itztaru, which means that from the hardships of the travels of the Ten Lost Tribes, they were no longer able to have children. Right? Which means that there were, from that time, no children of the Ten Lost Tribes, because all of the women were not able to have children after that generation.
Pretty
the Gemara says that. Absolutely. That from the hardships of their travels to wherever they needed to go or wherever they were exiled to, their wombs were so burdened and battled that they were not able to have children. That's a good question, right? How would we know if we don't know where they went? How would we know this name? That's true. Okay, interesting.
Didn't somebody say that the 10 tribes are going to come back?
Right. Unless it's from the men.
The tribe is from the men, right? So
yeah, but they
may not be Jews, but they're still from that tribe. No,
I don't think so. It's true. The tribe is from the men, but only if they're Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if they're non-Jews, they're not from the tribe of Ephraim.
Mm-hmm.
If the mother's not Jewish,
the kids become Jewish until they're 12.
Right. So that's answer number one of the Gemara. Yeah.
Like, do we just take that as...
Well, hold on. We're not done with the Gemara yet. But you're right. It's something to keep in mind as we go forward to look for and discover and search for these 10 lost tribes, it's something to keep in mind, which is why I saved this Gemara for the end, because this is only the first answer. Wait until the second answer of the Gemara, which could be even more fascinating. It may even have more ramifications to nowadays, but we'll see. So that's the first answer of the Gemara. Basically, right, again, Rav Asi started out with a concern that when you have a non-Jew who marries a Jewish girl nowadays, you have to be worried that maybe that non-Jewish man is from the 10 tribes, and therefore he's a mamzer. Right? That's Rav Asi's concern. Because maybe his father was a Jew from the 10 tribes, and his mother was not Jewish. Shmuel answers that if a man from the 10 tribes marries, has a baby with a woman from a non-Jew, then the child won't be a mamzer, the child will not be Jewish at all. So that solves the answer.
Rav Asi didn't know that?
No, Rav Asi disagrees.
Rav
Asi's position is that it creates a Jewish mamzer, right? That if the father is Jewish and the mother is not, it's a Jewish mamzer, right? and then we asked, well, that answer, so Shmuel answers that child from the non-Jewish mother will be non-Jewish. So we don't have a concern about the non-Jews nowadays being from the 10 tribes, answers the Gemara, but what about maybe the girls, maybe the women of the 10 tribes had children, and we do have to be concerned that their children nowadays are walking around thinking they're non-Jews, and therefore this Jewish woman who marries a non-Jewish man, maybe that non-Jewish man is from the daughters of the 10 tribes, and therefore he's not Jewish, he is Jewish, he thinks he's not Jewish, but really he is Jewish, and this Jewish girl needs a get from him if they divorce. Answers the Gemara, we assume that the women of the 10 tribes, after they were exiled, could not have children. Fine. That's the first answer. The second answer of the Gemara is I'll say equally as puzzling. So then the Gemara says, Ika da amri ki amri se kameh de Shmuel amr le. There are those who say that Shmuel answered the question as follows. Again, just to set it up, skipping that second, the first answer. Rav Asi makes a statement, a non-Jew who marries a Jew nowadays, you have to be concerned that he's from the 10 tribes. And therefore, he's a Jewish mamzer, because he is the result of a Jewish man with a non-Jewish girl, and therefore he's a mamzer, and a mamzer can't marry a Jewish woman, so you have to be concerned. Answers the Gemara, Yigid Amri, Kamri, Se Kamei, De Shmuel, when they said this before Shmuel answered, Amrle, Lo Zazu Misham, Ad Sha'asa'um, Ovde Kochavim Gemurim. That they did not move from there until they made them, referring to the 10 tribes, into non-Jews. That they declared that the 10 tribes were considered non-Jews. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, Ba'Hashem bagadu ki banim zarim yaladu. That because they betrayed Hashem, they rebelled against Hashem, because they had foreign children.
Well, if you hold by the
Gemara
that says they can't have any children, then of course they're
going to
be
not
Jews,
because
any children that they do have will be
non-Jews.
So.
Right, so obviously this Gemara is assuming, well, either one of two things. Either this Gemara is assuming that the women of those times did have children, right? And even so, the Gemara says that they made them into non-Jews, or the Gemara is saying is that we assume, like Rav Asi, that when a Jewish man marries, has a child with a non-Jewish woman, the child is considered a Jewish mamzer. Right? I mean, Rav Asi's assumption may have been correct, that a Jewish man with a non-Jewish woman does not make a non-Jewish child, that makes a Jewish mamzer. Right? We may not be disagreeing with Rav Asi, but they made him, they treated him, they decided that he's considered a non-Jew. Right?
Okay. Still going according, right? Yeah, but isn't this trying to explain that Rav Asi is not correct?
Not this answer. Well, this answer is not saying, it's saying he's not correct, that we don't have to be concerned if a Jewish woman marries a non-Jewish man. Right? Rav Asi is concerned if a non-Jewish man marries a Jewish woman, we have to be concerned that that non-Jewish man, now again, if he's a non-Jewish man, it's not a good thing that this Jewish girl is marrying him, but we don't have to be concerned that it's a real kiddushin, because there's no kiddushin between a non-Jew and a Jew. Right, and therefore we don't have to be concerned with the offspring will be Jewish because it's from a Jewish mother, and if they separate, quote unquote, get divorced, they don't need a get because the man is not Jewish and the woman is Jewish, unless you're concerned that he is from the 10 tribes, and if he is from the 10 tribes, then he's Jewish, and if he's Jewish, they need a get, And B, if he's a mamzer, because he's an illegitimate child, but still a Jew, but a Jewish mamzer, he can't marry this Jewish girl.
What is our definition of a mamzer? It's just that, it's what does it mean by illegitimate? Is it that I know if the person was married, right? Question is if they were single, but they just had it at...
So any relationship that's listed in the Arayos, in the Torah, when the Torah goes through the Gilui Arayos relationships, and any incestuous relationship or Gilui Arayos relationship.
A child out of
wedlock, I don't think is a mamzer, no. She might be, but he's not a mamzer.
Can the kid at this point, can she marry a Kohen?
Can the kid marry a Kohen? A mamzer can't marry a Kohen. A mamzer can't marry a Yisrael.
A kid is born out of wedlock and then he marries.
I don't remember if he can marry a Kohen. But a mamzer can't marry a Yisrael.
Yeah.
Mamzer needs to find another mamzer.
Well, while we're on the topic, what's the question? We were talking about if the father was Jewish and the mother was not Jewish. What if the father
is Jewish,
right? In this case,
yeah.
Let's say he's one of the ten lost sons. What if the father is a mamzer?
Yeah.
And the wife is not Jewish, right?
Okay.
And she converts.
Huh.
What are the children? Are they mamzerim or not?
Do they? When does she convert?
Maybe she converts.
As she had a kid.
I guess so. That would depend on
if the kids are not Jewish and then the kids convert, then they're Jewish children.
So she converts and then they have children
afterwards.
Yeah,
just like any other case. I think I have to check if a mamzer can marry a ger. I have to check. Check in the Rambam if a mamzer can marry a ger. If a mamzer can marry a ger, then
I was going to throw that out as maybe that was the concern when they were talking about when the father is from the ten lost tribes and he's a mamzer and she's a non-Jew, but really she's going to convert and have kids. So we're worried about the children becoming mamzerim.
Well, how would he become a mamzer?
Through previous generations where they were both Jews.
Mm-hmm.
From
mm-hmm.
the ten lost tribes.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thought. So maybe we'll have to check into this, because mamzer, it is a discussion. One of the issues that we'll talk about next week, because it's discussed in all of the tshuvas about these tribes, is whether we have to be concerned about mamzerus, meaning that there was a potential of mamzerus amongst these tribes, even if they're Jews. Maybe it would be worse if they're Jews, because maybe they created mamzers, because let's say they had a good kiddushin but they didn't know about gittin, so they didn't give a get, and then you have them marrying two people getting remarried according to their rules, but our rules really require a get, and now they have children, makes a mamzer, and now everybody gets all messed up. If everybody's mamzerim, and then we can trust them that they're Jewish nowadays, but there's actually more issues because they'd be mamzerim. Right? But that we'll discuss more at length next week. That's an interesting discussion also, because you have to remember that the ten lost tribes got lost before the Gemara. Right? They got lost before the Gemara. They got lost right before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara was written around, a little before and after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which is a few hundred years later. So it's interesting that they didn't have all of this Judaism, right? So it's a thought, I'll throw it out there, and we can again discuss it more next week. Are they bound by, if they are in fact the Ten Lost Tribes, are they bound by the Gemara and the laws that we have? Well, let's say Purim. Purim, the holiday of Purim took place after they were lost. So do they have to celebrate Purim? Right?
Aren't there people that, what's that group of people that only do the literal...
Yeah, the tzidukim. The tzidukim, the karaim. So we don't... They're not part... I mean, they're problematic. The Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says, we can't marry their children. Because they don't accept the Gemara. The question is whether these tribes might be different. What would be the difference between these tribes and these Tzidukim? They didn't know about it. Right? The Tzidukim knew about it while it was going on, and they decided, we're not going to accept the words of the rabbis, we'll only accept the words of the Torah. The ten tribes... Right. That's what's discussed.
Wasn't a lot of the oral Torah given by the Hasinai supposedly also something they had brought as well as very soon?
It's a good question. And we do say that it was the Masorah that is passed on, and that it was given at Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu.
But the question was, what's the top to everybody?
Well, it was, right.
Like
it was taught to everybody.
Got a bunch of belongs. It wasn't
just
in the Torah. It was passing it
right.
Out, but it wasn't taught.
Right. So it's an interesting question, though. But it sounds more like they didn't know, right? Which is why some of their practices are different than ours. Even the ones who claim to be the Ten Lost Tribes, their practices are not exactly the same as ours, because they didn't have, they didn't have the Gemara and the whole of what the Torah became, and the development of the Torah they didn't have. Right? They didn't accept it, but they weren't told it. So, but that we'll hold off to discuss a little bit more in depth next week. So anyway, the question is, what does this Gemara mean? Right? The second answer to the Gemara is that they made them into non-Jews. So what does that mean? They made them into non-Jews. Right? First of all, how can they make anybody into non-Jews? How could the rabbis have the ability to uproot somebody's Jewish? Right? Can you take the Jew out of the Jew?
You're not Jewish 1 year.
Right, once a Jew, always a Jew, right?
Yeah, but isn't it sort of like what we're saying with the Karaites? Like, you can't marry them, so they're not really a part of your...
Well, the question is, why can't you marry them? Right, the reason why you can't marry them is probably more because we're worried about Mamzerim.
Mm-hmm.
That they may have married, quote-unquote, divorced, but not divorced according to Jewish law. And then maybe they didn't marry according to Jewish law, maybe they did marry, meaning everything is...
Well, they technically married according to Jewish law, but the other way they
married. If they had kosher edim. If they had kosher witnesses, kiddushin needs witnesses. For the marriage, you need witnesses. You need at least two witnesses. So if you didn't have kosher witnesses, that's the question as to whether that's a marriage. Or if they didn't do it in the way that we do it, right? We have a harayad mikudeshesli. We have an amira. The Gemara kiddushin discusses that you need an amira, meaning some type of statement, which is why we say harayad mikudeshesli unto the chuppah and the nasira, amira v'nasina. The nasina is the giving of the ring. So let's say you're missing one of them or both of them. So it depends on how they do marriage ceremonies amongst these tribes. Right? They had different types of marriage ceremonies. And whether that would be halakhically valid.
But doesn't Yishushin also say that, like, you're married if you're like in Bia?
Yeah, so one of the ways of Shidushin is Bia. Yes, unless that Bia is not being done in the context of a marriage. If the Bia is being done not in the context of a marriage, there is a whole question as to whether that is considered to be an act of acquiring for Kiddushin. That's right.
Okay.
So if, and let's say especially, let's say they thought they did a Kiddushin, right? Whatever their tribal marriage looked like.
And then they did.
And then they have Bia. So their Bia has no, they're not thinking this Bia is for Kiddushin. Right? They say, we're married already. Because we did whatever the tribal...
Just for Kiddushin.
No, because they're married already.
They didn't do it for purposes of Kiddushin. They did it after they thought they were married.
Right.
But regardless, if we don't hold that their marriage is kosher,
right.
Then there are no mamzerim. Everyone's just unmarried.
Then they're all married, right? Then they're all...
They're all non-married.
Out of wedlock.
Out of wedlock, so that's not mamzerim.
Yeah, I have to double check that. I'll double check that for next week. I'll try to get a list of mamzerim for next week.
So you mentioned of the Kochavim.
Yeah.
So is that to say that the Gemara considers these people that we're discussing on the same plane as if they were idol worshippers, as if they were involved in Avodah Zarah?
That's what it sounds like when the Gemara says that they made them into of the Kochavim.
Okay, they didn't confess the Kuchim and Avodah
Zarah. That's an interesting question. So what does it mean that they made them into of the Kochavim Gemurim? So we have a concept in halacha of a mumur lavodas kochavim. A person who serves idols is considered like a non-Jew, right? So the question is, he's a mumur lavodas kochavim. So what does that mean that he's like a non-Jew? Is that actually he's like a non? Is he actually a Jew, but we just don't trust him for certain things, or do we actually treat him like a non-Jew? Now here it says that they made him into ovdei kochavim gemurim, right? Which
sounds
is
pretty final.
Which sounds pretty serious. The question is, what does that mean? How could they do that? And who did they do that to?
Isn't Hasidim and Judaism also that if a kid marries a daughter, it means they consider him not Jewish either anymore? Like, say, Kaddish and stuff like that?
If an intermarriage. Well, that's, yeah, but not... I don't think... So that could... That could be connected to this Gemara.
Okay.
Why would that be connected to this Gemara? Because what's our concern in this Gemara? That this non-Jewish boy who's marrying this Jewish girl is a result of what type of marriage? Of a Jewish guy, right? A Jewish man from the 10 tribes and a non-Jewish girl, right? And now we're saying that they made him into Ovdei Kochom Gemur, which means that the children are like completely non-Jews. Or does that mean that the one who married, the person from the 10 tribes who married this non-Jewish girl, or who was together with this non-Jewish woman, is like a non-Jew? Right? Which means that a Jewish boy who marries a non-Jewish girl is made into a non-Jew. Right? So part of the question is, right, after we understand what this means, that he made it into a non-Jew, is that something that applies now? Right? Is this Gemara a Gemara which still applies? That when you have somebody who marries a non-Jewish woman, that we treat that Jewish man as a non-Jew, like Ka'ovdei Kochom Gemurim? Or was that a one-time rule that they said the 10 lost tribes, out?
It sounds like that's not why they were made into Ovdei Kochavim, because they married out. It's because they rejected the Beis HaMikdash.
Why do you say that?
Because
the Pasuk says, it's a good question, but the Pasuk says that the reason why they were made into non-Jews, or the proof to that is, because ki b'Hashem bagadu, that they rebelled against Hashem, ki banim zarim yaladu, that they had strange children, strange meaning from non-Jewish women. So it sounds like that was why they made them into non-Jews, was because they had children with non-Jewish women.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, was A, what does that mean, that they made them into non-Jews? And B, is that limited to that generation and those people of the 10 tribes? Or is that a universal and forever rule that anybody who marries a non-Jewish woman is made into a non-Jew or treated like a non-Jew? So, first, what does it mean? So there are two answers, two possible explanations. One is the simple explanation, which is, yeah, they're basically made into non-Jews. That we treat them like non-Jews, which would mean that the 10 lost tribes are lost, right? If all of the 10 lost tribes were treated as non-Jews from that time on, then all of their children are non-Jews, and then any tribe who claims to be from the 10 lost tribes, maybe they are, but halakhically they'd be considered non-Jews because of this Gemara, because it says that they made them all into non-Jews.
What does it mean by that? Does that mean they're not Jewish? So does that mean they're just considered that they worship idols? What is the definition of
right? Ovdei Kochom Gemurim.
Consider them non-Jews, or we consider them that they rejected from Hashem, so they worship idols.
Right? Are they idol worshippers,
or are they
non-Jews? Right. It's a good question. When the Gemara uses the language of Ovdei Kochom, it's an interesting thought. When the Gemara uses the language of Ovdei Kochavim, does that mean non-Jews, and that's just the way they said non-Jews? Or does that mean specifically idol worshippers? So I would think this sounds like it's Ovdei Kochavim Gemurim. Again, you know, I don't remember, off the top of my head, I can run a search and look through the Gemaras, but I don't know of any other places that the Gemara says Ovdei Kochavim Gemurim. I can check whether it has that language of Ovdei Kochavim Gemurim, because it would be worthwhile to compare the two Gemaras that do say that. So that's interesting. Maybe I'll try to look into that, see if there's any other Gemara where we say that somebody is considered like a complete idol worshipper, and whether we can try to figure out what that means. Well, nobody's going to argue on the Gemara.
Explain.
The question is, how do you explain the Gemara? So the Karen Ora, who was an Akron, he offers two explanations. And the Meiri has something similar to... No, the Meiri has something different. But the Karen Ora has two explanations. One is that, really, that it means that 10 tribes who married Gentiles, meaning the ones who married Gentiles, they lost their status as Jews. Right? Now, is it possible that some of them didn't marry Gentiles? Yeah. Right? It's possible that maybe they did marry amongst themselves. Some of them married Gentiles and some of them didn't. Right, some intermarried and some didn't. Now, it would only work in this if you assume that the Jewish women of those times were still able to have children. Right? Otherwise, all of them, everybody we have today, would be the offspring of non-Jewish women, right? So either everybody's from the non-Jewish women because the Jewish women of those times could no longer have children because of the travels, or the second answer of the Gemara does not accept that position, that the Jewish women of those times did not have, were not able to have children. And maybe the second answer of the Gemara is saying that some of the ten tribes married other Jews from the ten tribes, and some of them intermarried with the local community that they became a part of, and those were then those lost their status as Jews. Right? Which would mean that some of the ones who claim that to be from the ten lost tribes today, some of them would be Jews, and some of them would not be. Right? I mean, maybe they all got mixed together, and which could create problems. Now, that's one way of understanding the Gemara. The second way of understanding the Gemara, which would make it much more local, is that they were made into, when it says that they were treated like non-Jews, that means they were treated like non-Jews regarding, regarding marriage, which means, right, to answer Rav Asi's question, that this non-Jewish man who marries a Jewish girl today, and is even if it's a result of a Jewish male from the ten tribes and a non-Jewish woman, that Jewish male from the ten tribes who intermarried was considered like a non-Jew regarding marriage, and therefore their child is a non-Jew. Right? Even you, Rav Asi, would have to agree that their child is not a Jewish mamzer, an illegitimate child, but their child is a non-Jew. Right? And maybe that's all it means. That they intermarried then, it wasn't like the intermarriage between a Jew and a non-Jew. It was like two goyim getting together, two non-Jews marrying and having children, and therefore the children certainly are considered non-Jews. Now, what that would mean is that today, right, it would have no effect on the status of those who claim to be the Ten Lost Tribes. That answer, well, maybe it would tell me that answer would say that maybe they're considered like non-Jews, right? So either they're non-Jews, but not to say that they're mamzerim. Right? But it would be a much more local answer. It's not a general rule that anybody who marries a non-Jew is considered like a non-Jew. It didn't even mean that then. It meant that when they were marrying a non-Jew, they were considered like a non-Jew regarding the marriage. And therefore their child was certainly considered a non-Jew. Which would mean that it can be corrected through conversion. Right? It can be, not corrected, but it can become Jewish through conversion. Right? So those are the two possible explanations of this Gemara. Now the question, as I mentioned before, is if you take the first answer of the Gemara, that it's a general rule that somebody who marries a non-Jew lost his status as a Jew, is that still true today? Right? Here the Meiri, one of the one of the Rishonim, explains there are two opinions. He quotes two opinions who say that nowadays there are some who say that if a person marries a non-Jew, he's considered like a non-Jew and loses his status as a Jew. Most don't paskin that way. The Shulchan Aruch, the Tur, don't assume that way. They don't follow this opinion that if you marry a non-Jew nowadays, you become like a non-Jew. But rather, they follow the opinion that this was a one-time gezerah, one-time decree of the rabbis that was done with Ruach HaKodesh, with the through divine inspiration, that in those times of the ten tribes, when they married non-Jews, they lost their status as Jews. But that it would not be true any other time. And we have a Gemara that say, Afal b'shechata Yisraelu, that a Jew, even if he sins, is still considered a Jew. So to be able to uproot his status as a Jew and to take away that status of a Jew is not something that we have the ability to do today. It was only done then one time for those ten tribes who married outside of the tribes, and therefore they lost their status, but it was only done through the Anshei Knesset HaGdola and the Ruach HaKodesh, but nowadays it wouldn't be true. Right, that's generally the most assumed that opinion. Okay, that's that Gemara. That's that part of the Hakdama, of the introduction. Okay, so we won't finish even this part tonight. But how do you establish somebody's Jewish? Right? So how do you establish how do you believe somebody that they're Jewish? Right? How do we know that all of us sitting here today are Jewish? Possibly, right? That Eidach HaNeman b'Yisroel, that one witness is trusted when it comes to Isser v'Heter, meaning that you can believe me, right? If somebody serves you food, how could you believe them that it's kosher food, right? Don't you need two witnesses to make any claim? So the answer is because when it comes to Isurim, one witness is enough, right? Eidach Naman be Isurim. So Rashi and Chumash in Bamidbar, when discussing the counting of all of the tribes, Rashi said that there were two ways for everybody needed to bring, right? They were counting with Mishpachosam, Leves Avosam. So there were two things that needed to, one of two ways that they would be able to prove that they were Jews, but really also they would prove which tribe they were from. So one was a written pedigree, that some tribes had a written pedigree, basically a family tree. The other was
Star Yichus.
The Star Yichus, right. So that's what they had then in order to prove who was from which tribe. The second one that Rashi says is that they would have Eidus on a Cheskas Leidasam, which means that they would have some type of testimony of that they were born into these Jewish parents. Which meant that their parents were Jewish, correct.
Well, what about if they were certified? Well, someone checks, you assume someone checks that.
How do
you
believe everyone's Jewish?
A long form.
Right, so nowadays we have a chazaka. See, that there they required a little bit of a higher level to prove their membership of the tribes, because there they were creating a nation.
So here, like rabbis, when you're married, they don't ask you for anything?
So sometimes
a lot of times they do.
Correct.
Yeah, rabbis sometimes require that people show their parents ksuba,
mm-hmm.
To basically say that here's a proof that our parents were married and therefore we're legitimate children and members of the Jewish nation. Yeah, but nowadays we also rely on the chazaka.
Israel, I got married in Israel, and they required us to not only copy the ketubah, but also a letter from the Beit Din said that my parents were, that they knew that my parents were Jewish.
A letter from Beit Din?
From the Beit Din in Toronto.
Of Toronto.
But also in Shemek Naliyah, they asked you to fill out, they asked you where your mother was born, to make sure that you're Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, right. So that required a... Yeah, no. That makes sense. It would be so by marriage, we'll see. Marriage, they require a little bit of a higher level of knowledge. It also could be because they didn't know you, meaning you were coming from a different place and they didn't know you. Meaning if you were getting married to Israelis from an Israeli town, so the rabbi may not require each of them to give those documents because they know the families and know that they're Jewish.
Well, as you're saying, when you come into Aliyah, then they require certain
information. There you're trying to join.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like I guess my in-laws already did that when
mm-hmm.
they went.
So I wonder if you have two Israelis getting married, do they also require all the information?
I don't think so. It's a huge issue on a practical level because... And what we're talking about right now in America, it's very important, but it's basically only on a religious level. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's a practical issue, not just on a religious level, but if you are a Jew in Israel, you have certain rights, very practical, everyday rights that are going to be awarded to you if you're Jewish and not if you're a guy.
Uh-huh.
Jews have different rights in Israel than Arabs do.
Uh-huh.
Not commenting on whether that's right or wrong, but
right.
it's just a fact of daily life that
mm-hmm.
you have certain voting rights, legal rights,
privilege.
Economic rights as a Jew in Israel that you wouldn't have if you're not a Jew in Israel.
Uh-huh.
So when you're coming into Israel from a different country, whether it's America, Canada, wherever. They need to be very, very
mm-hmm.
careful and concerned about establishing, are you a Jew? How do we know that you're a Jew?
Right.
We want to see proof.
Right.
As much proof as possible.
Right. So that makes sense. So a lot of what we have today is we rely on the chazaka, which means that in the absence of contradictory evidence or reason to suspect otherwise, we rely on the chazaka. Chazaka is that if a person acts like a Jew and for X amount of days he's a member of a community and he follows all of the halachas and he claims to be a Jew, then we rely on the fact that he's accepted as a Jew, right? Meaning we accept that everybody in the community, if they come to shul and they follow the halachas and they act in accordance with Jewish law, we assume that they're Jewish because they're acting as Jews and they seem to be claiming that they're Jews, right? The question is, so let's say somebody comes, you don't know them, and they claim to be a Jew. So can you believe them? Right? Well, let's say somebody comes and claims to have converted. Right? Can you believe him? Can you believe that person? Now, regarding getting married, could be a different story. That for marriage we'd require maybe a little bit more of more proof, a higher level of proof, because we have an idea called Ma'ale Achsu B'Yuchsin, that we require a little bit of a higher level of evidence for the purposes of Yuchsin, for the purposes of marriage, because of the effects and the seriousness of the results that come from that and having children. So for marriage you might require a higher level of proof. But let's say somebody just comes and claims to be a Jew. So do you believe them? Do you trust them that they're a Jew? So there's a fascinating Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, right in the beginning of Pesachim. So we know that the Pasuk says, what time is it?
It's
9:30. Okay, so maybe we'll just let's learn this Gemara in Pesachim first. It's a great Gemara. It's a fascinating, great story. The Gemara says that we know that the Pasuk says, Kol ben nechar lo yochabo. The Pasuk says that no, a non-Jew is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach, and Kol orel lo yochabo. Anybody who is not circumcised is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. So the Gemara tells a story about an Arma, somebody from an Aramite. So an Arma, who Arma davisalik v'achol Pesachim b'Yerushalayim. He used to come to Yerushalayim every year, and he used to eat Pesachim. He used to eat the Korbanos. And he would tell people that I'm a Jew. And they would give him, let him share with their korban with him. So the Gemara says that he would go back to his town, and he would tell the rabbi in his town that your Torah says that a non-Jew is not allowed to eat the korban Pesach, and it says that an uncircumcised male is not allowed to eat the korban Pesach. And I ate the best of the best. I ate the korban Pesach. I ate the good parts of the korban Pesach. So Amar Le Rabbi Yehuda ben Beser. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beser was the rabbi in this town he was talking to. He says, Mika safu locha me'alya. Who gave you from the tail of the animal? Now, the tail of the animal on the Korban Pesach is burnt. Right? So they didn't eat the tail. So he says, yeah, the best, they used to give you the best part. Did they give you the tail? Right, wink, wink.
Yeah.
So Amar Le, lo. He said, no, they didn't give you the tail. So he says, now I know what to ask for. He selected the lahasam, emalahu safuli mealia. So he said, you know what? If you really think you can eat the best, you think they're giving you the best, ask them for the tail next year. So the guy says, okay, good idea. So kisalik, he goes amalahu mealia safuli. He comes to his group and he says, I want a piece of the tail this year. So amrule alia legavo asalka. They said, the tail, that's burnt, that's given to Hashem. Amrule man amalacha hachi. Who told you to ask for the tail? Amr Lahu, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah. The rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah, told me to ask for the tail. Amru, they said, my hai de kaman badku basre. Sorry, they said, Amru, my hai. They said, what's going on here? So they decided, you know what, we have to check. De kaman badku basre, vashkhud armahu vikatlu. They then looked into it, and they found out that he was not Jewish, and they killed him. So Shalchu Leiler, Yehuda ben Beserah, Shalom Lachar, Yehuda ben Beserah, Atman Etzivin and Mitzvasecha, Prusim Yerushalayim. They said, great to you, Yehuda ben Beserah, that you are in your place and your net extended all the way to Yerushalayim. So Tosfos asks, how come Yehuda ben Beserah didn't go to Yerushalayim? Everybody has to bring the Korban Pesach. So he says, maybe he was sick or maybe he was old, but that was a detail to the story. But you see, what you do see from the story is, A, don't ask for the tail because they'll suspect you.
You see, every day.
And you see what happens when they suspect you of eating the Korban Pesach inappropriately. Okay, we can ask about why he got that punishment, but what we do see from this Gemara
it's
is
important to know he's Jewish.
Not just it's important to know he's Jewish, but
it's a question.
We believe this guy. He comes to Yerushalayim, he claims to be Jewish, and he was believed.
So it's a cautionary tale. It's pointing out the importance of not taking everyone at their word, because if you do,
maybe,
there could be bad consequences.
Maybe that's what's telling us, or it's telling us that you can trust somebody when he claims to be a Jew. just as they did in Yerushalayim. Now it was there was a story about one guy who one person here who beat the system, right? But they did trust him. Right? They did trust him when they when he claimed to be a Jew. They trusted him and gave him the Korban Pesach.
What about his kids?
What?
What about his kids?
What about him? So, but what we see from here is that if a person claims to be a Jew, you can believe him that he's a Jew. He might be lying. He might be lying.
But you have to look at the repercussions. Like each circumstance. All right, so give him a piece of the Korban Pesach.
True. Which is why when marrying this guy, maybe they would have checked him out a little bit better.
Right.
But if a person claims to be a Jew, comes to shul, and he puts on a talis, and he says, I'm a Jew, I have a yahrzeit, I want a davening, I want to get an aliyah. Do you have to ask him if can you believe him and give him an aliyah?
Well, it's, I guess it's
based on this Gemara,
it sounds like
this Gemara. What do you,
yes.
Yeah,
but there's less harm in giving someone aliyah than letting him daven for the Amud even.
But he accused the Korban Pesach.
And then we come.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. The thing
old,
is,
old school.
that they're claiming to be Jews and doing is it? I know that they're not allowed to do it, but is there anything against you for letting them do it?
Yeah, you're not supposed to give them.
You want
to
be Jewish?
Sure, you have to eat the Korban Pesach. You have to eat the whole Korban Pesach. You were over on Isser by giving him the Korban. Yeah. He didn't bring the Korban Pesach. He joined the group who was very
over.
You gave it to him.
Yeah, but you didn't know and were allowed to assume.
That's true. So that's right. The people who gave him a piece of the Korban Pesach, did they have to do tshuva? Did they do something wrong? So you're right. Maybe not. Because they were honest. They had no idea.
What's our shul's policy? If someone walks into shul and, like, he's not... You know, like, my brother's going to join me to shop. I'll tell you he's my brother. But if someone walks into shul and he just had
no
keep it, and no one vouches for him, and he says, I have a chi, you know, whatever. I'll
right.
Be
right.
Well, I'm not
oh, well, point. You're asking me.
You would know.
It's a good question.
It's like
question.
It's a very
what should be the shul policy based on this Gemara?
I'm asking.
No, I'm saying, but what would, based on this Gemara, you're right.
Then based on this Gemara,
it sounds right. Like it should be. There. Yeah.
Very low risk. Like, what's going to be the real
true,
harm?
There's low risk.
Yeah.
It's true. The person gets up there and gets an aliyah, what's the big deal? So he's not Jewish.
Right.
It wouldn't be a big deal. There wouldn't be any terrible calamity.
That's why
the person gets up there, damages the Amud, and you know, reads Hebrew fluently, and he happens to not be Jewish.
It's okay to have the Pesach.
Because it's capital punishment.
And the thing is, when they're looking at the marriages, then they'll look more into it.
Exactly.
Sure that
exactly. That's true. But we do trust them. But we can't trust.
What about for
be
an aide?
It's not a big deal.
Be
like,
what about for an aide? Right? Can I trust them to be an aide for Kiddushin? Right? Right? No, Kiddushin, you need two kosher witnesses. For Kiddushin, it's a big thing. You need real two kosher witnesses, and without those witnesses, it's not a Kiddushin. So can you trust them to be an aide? Right? It's one thing when it comes to marry him. Sure, we'll look into it. But you have to look into it the same for him to be an aide on the Kiddushin or an aide in any other type of case. Right? In the halachic Beis Din, so only Jews are trusted, are allowed to be, are kosher witnesses. So can you allow him to be a witness in the Beis Din? Right? So based on this Gemara, it sounds like, yeah, why not? Right?
In that case, by the way, I'm a Kohen. No,
it's a similar question. Oh, you're right. It's a similar question. That's right. That's right.
Well, there was a story when I was in yeshiva in Israel. There was a guy who his father told him that he was a Levi, so he thought he was a Levi, and he found out his father just like his father. I don't know if it wasn't so firm or whatever. And decided, you know, he just made it up himself. And he found that out when he was in yeshiva. Said he was the firstborn, so he had to have a pidgin on a ben. So he had a pidgin on a ben at the age of 19.
That's true. Although they used to put like hands, like the Kohen hands on the graves, not only on Kohanim. That it used to be like a sign of righteousness. So that's why there were certain times, certain places, certain periods where even if it looks like the person was a Kohen, it may not have been. Anyway, so it's not so simple based on this Gemara. It is true, it seems like it is, but what's, and we'll just end with this thought, what's unique about this Gemara, or different about this Gemara, is where was this story happening?
In Yerushalayim.
In Yerushalayim. Would it be true outside of Yerushalayim? Would it be true in New York? In somewhere in the Midwest, let's say, where there aren't a lot of Jews? I mean, did they trust him in Yerushalayim because it was in Yerushalayim, but everybody was Jewish in Yerushalayim around the times of Korban Pesach.
But everyone was traveling to Yerushalayim, so it doesn't matter.
Well, why would it be significant? So why would it be significant that it was in Yerushalayim? Because most people there were Jewish.
You say most people in the shul.
In the shul.
So the shul in Omaha, Nebraska, it's still in the shul.
Okay, maybe.
A random person.
Okay, let's say a random person in the in okay,
teaching.
Okay, I hear you saying, would we? Would we?
Why would somebody? Let's say, as far as they were Jews, they're hate. Why would someone want to say they're Jews? Some of them are Jews in the Midwest.
Again, for the Shalons.
Huh?
That's true. Why would they? We don't want to. Let's say they maybe they want to marry a Jewish girl.
Yeah, but the.
Let's say maybe they met a Jewish girl, so they're trying to convince everybody that they're Jewish, even wherever. So that we'll have to look into a little more next week. Whether this Gemara was trusted anywhere, is that a rule that we could just trust somebody when they tell us that they're Jewish, or is that only because they're in Yerushalayim, and almost everybody in Yerushalayim and those types. Certainly during the time that the Korban Pesach was being brought, when everybody in Israel came to Yerushalayim, that was a reason why we trusted this person to claim that he was a Jew. Mm-hmm. So we'll pick up next week. Again, this all will...